innovation is going to come from collaboration. And even as I mentioned, learning new things and partnering. And yes, you can be very efficient as an island in the short term, but you've got to connect and collaborate to innovate and get better.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operation. My name is Sagi. I'm the CEO and founder of Tonkin. And today I have the pleasure of hosting Jason. Hello, Jason. Thank you for joining me.
Hey, Sagi. Nice to be here.
Absolutely. Jason, I'll give you a little brief, but I would love to hear your story. Jason is the managing partner at ArgoPoint and a chair of buying legal counsel. And really, I've been following your work for some time now, really bringing together the world of legal technologies and buying, what it means to buy in legal and how to manage spend and so on. So I think very interesting kind of mix of both worlds. But maybe before we go deep, because there's so much to talk about here, can you maybe give us a quick brief of your career and how you got to this point?
Yes, Sagi, appreciate that. So I'll try to summarize. I've been an advisor to Fortune 500 and Global 500 companies for almost 30 years. My focus on the last 20 years, though, has been advising the legal departments, very typically of the most sophisticated and largest business organizations in the world, on how to manage their legal department more like a business. Legal departments are big, they're complicated, they're staffed and organized with some of the most highly qualified and best educated people in the corporate world, but they still need help on management advice. And that's been ArgoPoint's focus for the past 20 years. And it's really been a great journey. As part of that, I've also been very involved with many organizations, but the one that's been the most meaningful to me has been the Buying Legal Counsel. That was a organization that was also started by large, sophisticated corporate legal departments and procurement organizations that wanted to do things better. And been a contributor to that. I've helped them with their many books and white papers and even a Harvard Business case study. I'm now the chair of the organization, and that's also been a great deal of fun. I find it very rewarding to contribute to the community in that way.
Thank you for that. I think I love how simple you framed it, making legal department run more like businesses. I think this is a trend, or it should be a trend, I should say, in all departments. I think there's a lot to be said there, but maybe let's stay for a little bit longer with the legal. When I looked around and studied some of your work as well, some called you the founder of legal procurement. I think this is an interesting, another way to look at it is where you merge those two concepts together. Why is it so important? Let's double click in. Why do legal needs to manage themselves as a business?
Yeah, there's an awful lot in there. So the challenge is legal is a important and expensive function inside companies. And it's critical that they remain aligned with the business. They are not in the business of litigation. They're not in the business of patenting things. They're in the business of running a business and creating customers and generating revenue from that. So legal needs to stay very aligned with the business to do that. One of the things that legal has been very good at has also been keeping the business and corporate policies and initiatives at an arm's length distance and saying, we're legal, we're separate, we make the rules and policies. We're not really so good at following. So a great theory of innovation, one of the myths of innovation is that people think innovation is about Steve Jobs going up to the top of the mountain, sitting up there for a while and coming back down with something that's fantastic. A more practical and pragmatic version of innovation is combining two things that already exist, but bringing them together. And I love the example of the personal computer plus calligraphy, if you can see where I'm going with this, things Steve Jobs knew an awful lot about, he studied calligraphy in college, creates the GUI and the Mac and the interface that we know today. But he invented neither of things. In fact, he may have borrowed some of those from Xerox. Rather than coming up with something entirely new, because that's very different, and I don't like walking up mountains, and it's probably boring up there anyways, I thought it might be good. Maybe we could combine things that already existed. And inside a company, you had the legal department, which was doing some very critical work for the business, and the procurement department that was helping other functions become more efficient and help them get the most from every dollar and was very good at helping with outsourcing of things. And a lot of what we did in those early days, and I'm not sure I was the father, but I was certainly a pioneer of legal procurement, was taking practices that procurement and other business people were using really successfully in other parts of the company and bringing them into the legal department. Now, you had to customize, you had to make them different, you had to adjust them, but the concepts themselves were very sound and it was a matter of bringing them together. If there's any takeaway, we can talk about legal, we can talk about procurement, but a lot of innovation, it's about combining things that exist. And I think that's been part of my approach.
I couldn't agree more. Honestly, I would take it further. I don't think creating something new is even a thing. You can go far down to just the Newton laws and energy. There's no new energy. Energy just cannot change form. It's the same amount of energy that is just changing forms. And I agree with you. I think any so-called new thing is a new variation of combining few things together. It's actually very important point that I've had conversation about similar things in this podcast, but never on the combination of legal and procurement. But for example, taking the progress, methodologies, and tooling from, for example, from product and engineering, like agile, and being more improvement over time, and having the idea of understanding you have a user and the user has needs, and bringing that into operations, into stuff. And I love, a big believer in that idea of there's a reason why a legal team works in a certain way, why a procurement team works in a certain way, why a product team works in a certain way. But where the world is going towards is that each of those departments is no longer an island that can be just a force function of a certain aspect, especially on big companies. They become so big, they're bigger than some countries' GDP. You know, it's like it's so big that each one of those departments has to be managed and ran as a business, but also therefore bring all of those different skills and methodologies to their world. I think one thing that I want to hear your thought about too, and I've seen personally, funny enough, is that when you talk to procurement people, a lot of times they'll complain about the legal team.
Yes.
And then when you talk with the legal team, a lot of times they'll complain about the procurement team. What I found funny though, is that they complain about the same things about each other. There's some culture and some baseline differences. How did you kind of came about that when you were trying to come to big companies and basically tell them, hey, you should really learn from those guys, or you should really merge some of those methodologies?
Yeah. Yeah, no, a lot of what you're saying really resonates with me, and I appreciate your perspective. One thing that I kind of stuck as you were sharing was the bit about groups and companies, legal and procurement can become it's very efficient. You can move really fast. You can get stuff done. You don't have to consult. And it's great if you can throw some elbows because people stop messing with you. The fact of the matter is, though, any corporate function, whether it's IT, whether it's HR, whether it's legal, whether it's procurement, if you stay an island, you will cease to be competitive. Innovation is going to come from collaboration and even, as I mentioned, learning new things and partnering. And yes, you can be very efficient as an island in the short term, but you've got to connect and collaborate to innovate and get better. The complaints that you mentioned from both sides, from legal and from procurement, let's acknowledge those, you know, those are real, okay? And those are legitimate. I'm not going to deny those. Legal and procurement both view the problems and opportunities of the corporate world and marketplace with very different lenses. And those lenses are often shaped by their incentives, what they are being asked to do and asked to contribute. If, however, there's an interest, and there has to be an interest in learning from your fellow corporate citizen, there's a lot to be learned, but it does require some generosity, some humility, some time and patience. You've got to be willing to collaborate with someone. And as much as I'd like to say functions collaborate, it's really probably people in companies collaborate. And you've got to find people in the legal department that are willing to collaborate with the procurement professionals and vice versa. And that's the way people, human beings work. Investment and relationships happen at a much smaller scale, even inside the biggest corporate entities.
I like the idea. So, you know, if I'm trying to bring it down to something practical, right? Let's say I'm a listener here and I'm head of one of those functions. I think incentive really resonated with me when you said that word. And I think let's try to bring it to the ground. Like, what is the incentive? How is the future looking like? Because to me, that connects to that. Whatever was working 25 years ago is not going to work in the next 25 years. And that same actually applies to 10 years and maybe even 5 years. And so how would you suggest to someone like a director or a VP or whatever, someone that is running this one of those functions?
Yeah, like where do you start? I'm talking at a very high level, and maybe you talk about relationships. Certainly it could sound a little flaky and it's true, but let's be a little more practical. Let's come up with a problem statement. Legal departments, the cost of legal services is astronomical. The demand for legal services is through the roof, at least in corporate America. And therefore, the prices are also through the roof. In-house legal departments are beleaguered in the sense that they have more needs than they have resources. And that's a universal complaint that I hear working with some of the biggest, some of the most sophisticated, and some of the best funded legal organizations in the world. We don't have enough. So that's a problem statement. And if the legal department was looking for solutions and ideas and innovations, they've been working on this problem for 20, 30 years. These prices have been on a one-way ticket up to the moon. There are people inside corporations that are good at buying things, that have market intelligence, and that can often help manage outside advisors and suppliers strategically. And many of those people reside inside the procurement organs. So finding that problem, hey, we'd like to manage outside costs in the legal domain more efficiently. And that doesn't mean that costs are going to go down, but it might mean that we're going to know what we're buying and we're going to get a very fair price for what we're buying. So it doesn't even mean savings. It just means better, has many different definitions. Identifying a problem and then starting small with some kind of collaboration. You don't need to innovate with the biggest, baddest, most challenging problems. And you don't need to be comprehensive. How many corporate initiatives die because people envision some sort of cold fusion in a jar? If we can't solve all the problems, endless energy for free, we're not going to do it. Guess what? That's a big problem. It's not going to be solved in the short term. And that's probably not where I'd advise people to start with their physics thesis if they're in academia. Start small. Pick something that maybe you're curious about and thinking about, but doesn't really matter. And try to find partners, both in legal and in procurement, that are willing to learn and are willing to invest in the relationship.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast.
I think there's a lot of headwinds for some of those things, right? I kind of have a little experience with those groups. And what's interesting is so many companies would have a different billing system or a different ERP for legal, right? For the outside counsel, while the rest of the purchases goes through. There's almost like a wall that needs to be broken there. So I think spend and cutting spend and just managing spend where it comes to the economic climate right now, I think that's a good incentive. But some would say that AI and the risk that's going to bring risk and reward that's going to bring into leveraging resources differently. I'm a big believer that sitting on your hands is the only sure way to lose. It's the only not moving forward is the only way to make sure you're dead. So, but not being on the negative aspect of it, trying to be
positive. But I think we need to actually, can I jump in
please.
Here? Yeah. And some of the words you're saying really resonate. You mentioned what are the headwinds here? Okay. And I think you're being polite. I'll be a little, legal is one of the most change resistant functions in the corporate world. Corporate America is more my expertise, although I certainly work with many global companies. And there's a lot of academic data that I've seen that would back that up. My own career working with different parts of big organizations backs that up. Legal is not just headwinds. It can be outright change resistant. And it's not because people are stupid or lazy. Quite the contrary. I think the legal executives and colleagues are often some of the smartest and most hardworking people that I've ever come across. So how do you overcome those headwinds? Legal is not a particularly innovation-friendly function in general. They're a little bit more, the lenses are more about risk management and identifying challenges and risks and problems, as opposed to saying, hey, this looks like an interesting innovation. Let's roll the dice on this one. I'm dying to try this. I hear that in legal, but not as much as I do on other functions like marketing or sales or even IT, right? How do you overcome that? And the answer is it's not easy. But I think that the short thing is you start small, you pick things that are low risk, you build up a track record of successes and wins, and you change over time. People talk about transformation. I don't see a ton of transformations in this space. What I see is good, solid, phased, wave-based incremental improvement. The winners, as you say, are the people that keep trying and keep experimenting. Alternative fees, for example, are another way of buying things in the legal space. Hourly billing is the default. I remember a mentor of mine, legendary leader at Johnson & Johnson, had probably some of the most advanced alternative fees in the industry, if not the pharmaceutical industry, but just the legal industry about 20 years ago. Brilliant guy, Harvard guy. And I said, how do you know that these are saving you money in advance? And he said, Jason, I don't know. These are experiments. I'm running experiments, clinical trials, just like the scientists here at J&J. But I have a process and I am dedicated to this and I am going to learn, but it's not going to be measured in quarters. The learning's going to be measured in years. And I'm convinced that we're smart enough here that we can get better over time if we have better data. If you adopt that kind of approach, that you're willing to learn, you're willing to make measured, not catastrophic, but take measured risks to get better data, you will start advancing over your competitors over time. But there has to be a commitment to it, because the easiest thing is to say, this is unproven. I don't know if it's going to be better. And the way we're doing it is not terrible. It's not terrible. It's not optimal, but it's not terrible. And the alternative could be worse.
I think the context of the macro environment is important too, because I think you need a commitment. But I think the bare minimum is you need to have the ability to adapt. I think something that a lot of my recent guests were actually from the procurement world, and it actually just happened that way because there was such a big wave of innovation and change in the last couple of years with procurement. They were not looking for change either. They were not happy to make changes. But guess what? The world flipped upside down for a couple of years with the pandemic, and the first thing that got hurt was the supply chain. And so now all of a sudden, a lot of the norms of how they define their own role has dramatically changed. And so a visual way to see that change a lot of times is where money is being spent, money allocation. And then you see a lot of new companies or new tools or technologies or consulting firms and whatever it is starting to invest in that because there's a demand to it. I believe in a cautionary tale here. And maybe as the last point here to kind of like hear your thought, but I do think a change is coming for legal. I think we're in any department, there's a 10, 15 years, maybe sometimes 20 years cycles, but not a lot more than that. You might connect it to a generation change. You might connect it to whatever you want, but there's usually a timeline in which something happens that really disrupts a industry or a function. And maybe for legal is AI, maybe the latest progress in AI, I mean, maybe it's other things. But to me, it feels that just like the pandemic changed a lot of how procurement teams operate and see themselves, I think legal team is, it's going to happen. And so to me, when I think about management and managing things as a business, has a very interesting value attributes that a team or a department not necessarily have, which is it is the closest to a live entity. Why? Because it can be dead. You can define life as the opposite of death. You know what I mean? And so it is alive because it can be, in fact, dead as a business, as an entity. And I think the...
Instead, what's the oxygen and what's the blood of the business?
It's absolutely the ability to justify itself by making money when you're thinking about a business. But making money can be one of the goals if it's a profit-driven business. And I think your question is spot on because a lot of departments, when they're trying to, if they're trying to think of themselves as a business, which by the way is 100% true because they also have customers. Legal doesn't serve no one. They serve other departments. Marketing serves purpose. They have customers. The business as a whole might serve external customers, but each department has their own customers as well, their own requirement, their own budget. But whether you measure your goal in dollars or you measure it by some other milestones, there is always a target that you're going after and trying to achieve. To me, the disruption to a business can also be true for a role or a department. And so I'm asking you, do you think I'm overreacting or do you think that legal, in fact, would be forced to change sometimes in the next decade, if not sooner? Or do you think that the things that worked in the past can continue to work forever and ever or for any foreseeable future?
There's a lot in there as always. It's a fantastic and fascinating discussion. I love this notion of how do we think of the business organization? And of course, the classic and even straw model is Harvard Business School many years ago used to think of a corporation as a machine. There's this Taylorist approach to business and managers were engineers of people and processes. And then of course, the next academic wave came in and said, no, companies are networks of people and think of your network within the company and influence. And it's less about the org chart. It's more about how people are connected. But I really do love, I think that today you hear a lot about people thinking about business as an organism. And I like the notion of with a life force, Sagi, I actually don't hear that it's intriguing, right? Like business survives in an ecosystem and businesses that are not competitive in a Darwinian sense, these two exist. So there's an
adaptive, like Darwinian is not about the strongest survive, is the most adaptive survive, right?
Exactly. And to me, I think the oxygen and the food for a company would be customers. The definition of a business for me is creating a customer. And I think without customers that are happy and delighted and loyal and proud to work with companies and to partner with them, that organism is going to cease to exist. I love the metaphor. To your question about where we are in an inflection point, the world is changing at an accelerating pace. And it sounds like a cliche, but in fact, it's true. And you think of that little organism, that business, and there was a Russian novelist famously said something to the effect of, you may not be interested in a war, but war tragically is going to be interested in you. I think the theme is through for change and innovation. You can say I'm an island and I'd like to wall myself off from it. There's too much geopolitical change. Supply, globalization has been a 70-80 year trend that has dominated the business of our lives and business. It's been a one-way direction for globalization. Supply chains and globalization have hit the brakes and it's in reverse. Supply chains are realigning back in a much more regionalized model. And that's going to have huge follow-on effects. AI, we don't need to talk about it. It's a change in the order of magnitude like the semiconductor or the internet. It's big and it's going to change things. So legal and procurement need to be agile. I'm very fortunate that I lead an international educational organization, the Buying Legal Council. And my theme last year, which is good enough that I'll continue with this year, is we need to manage less with, we'll continue to do strategic plans and think analytically, but we've also got to be improvisational and experimental. And a lot of that is staying connected. Just to make this very practical, I can get up in the abstraction. I'm talking to more people in the past 18 months than in the previous 36 months. Some of that does have to do with COVID, but people offer a conversation. I have a much more time to investigate, discover, and learn than I ever have. And yep, at a certain point, you do run out of time and you run out of hours, but this is the time where you want to be differentially investing in having your antenna up and learning more, making more connections, and being aware of your environment. In fact, I think it's professionally irresponsible if you don't.
I could not agree more. I love the oxygen is the customers as well. I can even simplify it further. From money, you took it to customers. Maybe we take it to value. You know, the business is, you need to bring value to other people. And I think that can then apply to any department. Are you bringing the value? Will you be able to continue to bring the value? And that's your existential risk. And then if you're not putting your antenna up, like you said, you're not being actually doing your job. And so this is great stuff. I know we might want to do a follow-up conversation on this.
I'd love to. I think we're only scratching the surface. And I very much admire what you guys are doing at Tonkin. And I've gotten to know your team through in-person events, but also virtually. And it's also been an example of people in your team have reached out and said, hey, do you want to chat and just exchange information about what we're doing and how we're helping in different ways? And they've always been great conversations. And this is a continuation of that.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll definitely do that. But to finish up this episode, I'd like to ask, what is the best advice that you have received in your career? I think we came up with a good advice here today for departments to stay alive, but maybe back to the personal side of it. Something you got through your career you think is worth paying forward.
Yeah. So the headline is 90% of success in business is showing up. That's the advice. And I've gotten it the heritage of this or the provenance of this. There's an old Woody Allen joke in one of his movies, 90% of life is showing up. I always thought that was brilliant. I heard that as a kid. I said, there's something really profound in that. But my mentor at Harvard Business School and my first employer was Professor Rosabeth Moss Kanter. She was a legend at the business school and beyond. She was the first woman editor of the Harvard Business Review. I believe she was the second woman to get tenure at the institution. And she was also prolific and wise in her writings. Her advice, though, her number one business advice was, she said, I'm stealing this from Woody Allen, but 90% of success is showing up. And recognizing the power of this is recognizing that your presence matters and finding meetings and groups and communities and even just people in your organization that value you showing up, recognize your own value and finding other people value. And the more you keep showing up, the more you're going to learn about other problems, other people's situations. You're going to have more empathy. You're going to be more skilled. And this advice, I'm telling you, Saggy, maybe this is a business operations podcast. To mind, it's number one rated on an Apple podcast because of good business advice. But this advice works whether you're in business, whether you're in a not-for-profit like a church or a synagogue or a mosque. It works in your family. I think of the people that I really respect and love have made my life and my family better. And maybe they aren't on paper the next leader of the free world, but they're people that consistently show up and demonstrate things like trustworthiness, concern, and care and knowledge of what's going on. So taking it back, recognize that you value and show up. I try to do it as best I can.
This is anyone with kids, I think, can instinctively connect to that concept. You just need to show up. It's all you have to do. And their eyes light up. And I think that's true for everything as well. So much you can.
It's number one for parenting, and I appreciate you bringing it up. But also, every parent is also a child. And also remembering, I visited a member of my family, this has been personal, in the hospital. And they told me they felt better and stronger and healthier when I visited. And that was not some throwaway comment. I really think there was a mental and physiological improvement. So it's great life advice that I've found. So what works in life might actually work in business.
I believe it. I 100% believe it. Great. So we know how it all connects right now, right? So businesses are basically organisms, and life advice and business advice are the same. I could not agree more. Jason, this was a blast. I really enjoyed it. If anyone want to continue geek out with you on those topics, where can they find you? Is it LinkedIn? Is it X?
I appreciate that. So it's Jason Windmill on LinkedIn. And I'm fortunate that I chair an international educational organization called the Buying Legal Council. And if you have questions about it, if you'd like to learn more about it, you don't have to sign up for it. I just love to chat with you about it and learn about what groups and organizations other people are at. Please reach out to me on LinkedIn is probably the best way to do it.
Perfect. Jason, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sagi. It was a real pleasure and honor to be part of the Modern Business Ops podcast.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at tonkin.com/mbopod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on all things business operations, join the Tonkin community at tonkin.com/community.